All right, everyone. I'd like to welcome you back to day two of the International Crypto Module Conference for 2016. Just a few announcements. Again, if you weren't planning to be in the certifications track, you better find another room because that's where we are today here. We'd like to thank our sponsors, without whose support this event would not be possible. Please take some time to visit them in the break area in room 214, just out there. We'll have our first break at 10:40, and lunch will be at 12:25, again in the exhibits area. Wi-Fi is provided by the Shaw Center here, so you'll find information on page 7 in your agenda, the conference program. Free public Wi-Fi is only available in the lower atrium. Conference presentation slides and audio are being posted to the conference website, and login information again is on page 7 in the program. This evening, there'll be a wine and cheese reception in the exhibit area, and from there, attendees that are doing the Dine Around Ottawa will be departing. That's for informal opportunities for you to dine with a group of colleagues. Stop, if you haven't already registered and want to attend, just stop by the registration desk and they'll sign you up. And finally, your feedback is important to us. At the end of the event, we'll be sending you an email with a link to a survey, so please take a few moments to fill that out and provide some feedback. So, our first session this morning will be given by Mary Baish, who is Deputy Director of the U.S. National Information Assurance Partnership that operates the U.S. Common Criteria Scheme. And with her will be Matt Scholl, who is the Deputy Division Chief within the National Institute of Science and Technology in their Computer Security Division. In his role, Matt promotes the development of strong cybersecurity standards, practices, and metrics to meet programmatic operations needs. Mary and Matt are going to be providing some insight on how NIST and NIAP are working together in the cybersecurity area. Mary, Matt.
So good morning, and thank you all for having us up. Mary and I are gonna kind of do this at the same time, which is our physical embodiment of the example of working together, but we'll see how smooth that goes as we quasi-step over each other, and thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you, and good morning. We've been working together now for a couple years, and so we're excited to give you an update on what we're doing and where we see this going.
Aaron, I just pushed the button.
Yeah.
Oh, look what I did.
Yeah.
Okay, so some of the things we're gonna talk about, some of our collaboration goals, some international standards, some agreements, and then some automation or some work we're doing together to try to maintain some efficiencies, understand and have better clarity on conformance and assessment of products, as well as information that we're sharing among the two schemes.
So like I said, we've been working together again for the last couple of years. And last year at ICMC, Janine Peterson and Mike Cooper gave a similar brief. So the intent is to give you an update. So what are our goals? So first, just to make sure that we stay in communication and that we have a partnership that ties the U.S. government certification programs closely together. And second of all, to eliminate duplicative testing. So as you know, Common Criteria has a lot of cryptographic requirements included within our protection profiles. And in the U.S., we have NIST that evaluates cryptography. So for the US, we have NIAP policy number 5, which in really high-level terms says that NIAP accepts NIST evaluation of crypto for our evaluations as well. And we're working with NIST in a longer-term goal to have that be reciprocal so that if a CC lab does cryptographic testing, NIST will recognize that as well. So that's a lot of work in regards to test evidence and how we work together and how we communicate these test results and things like that.
So as Mary said, the goal is that to reduce or eliminate duplicative testing that is occurring. And if a CC test lab is conducting cryptographic testing that is the same as the requirements in a CAVP or CMVP test, that then those test results could be shared across both schemes. And then one test effort could be done on the same product. The other intersection point is that for higher levels of assurance within the CMVP, historically we point then to a CC protection profile for the module to be used in a larger scoped environment that has an assurance around it. And in the past, we have pointed to certain EAL levels for certain CMVP levels in order for that to occur. And with some of the NIAP changes in common criteria, one of the things that we have reinvigorated on the partnership is to figure out what the new mapping is for those higher CMVP levels of assurances to the new NIAP protection profile, so we can continue as the CMVP program to take advantage of the common criteria certifications for higher levels of assurance for when modules are used in those tested areas.
Right, and just to add to that, in doing so, what we've begun to do is look at all the requirements that we have in protection profiles and what NIST CMVP, GTRs, and IGs say, and see how we can make those things map together and what sort of changes may or may not be necessary to get that alignment to its full potential. And so what we've found from a really high level so far are a couple of things from my perspective. The first being that we do a really pretty good job on algorithms, which is what we would expect. And the second thing is that terminology is the hardest, is the biggest hurdle, right? So CC has its own terminology and CMVP has its own terminology. And so getting on the same page in order to have that conversation is most of the discussion.
Yeah. And as easy as that sounds, that's actually quite difficult, because each of the terminologies that are used in both the schemes have long histories behind them and have significant meaning and understandings in the different communities. So rather than potentially trying to harmonize where we can on terminologies, we're also looking at what we can do as far as mappings. So you're using term A and we're using term B. They're actually the same intents or outcomes that are being sought. And can we map them as well as figuring out what terminologies we can use to come together as far as harmonization goes?
Mm-hmm. And so then in the future, we'll publish that.
But yes.
We aren't quite there yet.
No, but that's a work in progress that occurs. Okay. So on the international standardization front, and we're going to, I don't know if there's been talks about this already, but we've been talking about this publicly, let me put my notebook down, for quite some time, there's been a lot of work at NIST into bringing in the lessons learned, the history, the international collaborations that we've had with the CAVP and the CMVP programs into the international community through standards bodies, specifically through ISO and through IEC. In that work that's been done jointly with NIST, industry, and our international partners, many of these standards have been finalized and are now at a significant set of maturity, as well as, we believe, reflect the assurance requirements that the U.S. government, at least, has, and our partners, and establishing the assurances that we want in the crypto that's used to protect federal information. So as such, as we look to the future, the U.S. government also has requirements through policy and even through legislation to, whenever possible, to default to the use of industry-led international standards. So now as the FIPS 140 program comes into this intersection of the existence of a stable and final mature standard that reflects our risk tolerance requirements and the requirements to use international standards, we are going to move to recognition and use of the ISO standard as our first order requirement as we go forward in the future. We started with a Federal Register notice that was published in 2015 stating that this was our intent and asking for comments or concerns about this. You'll see under the second bullet there, most of the comments that we asked about were on the some of the ISO pay model, whereas FIPS 140 is free and whether or not that would be a differentiator, not just for industry and test labs, but also for academia and researchers. We received some feedback on that, and as such, the program is negotiating with ISO to allow NIST to carry most of that pay burden and alleviate that concern. NIST also has to go through, even though we are a non-U.S. regulatory body, a what we call a quasi-regulatory rulemaking process. And there's going to be a lot of jargon, like as if there hasn't been already, in my next couple of sentences, but bear with me. So we have to go through a very formal and disciplined process in making an official announcements and allowing for public participation and commenting on this movement forward. This is so in the U.S. we can have relief from any legal liability if someone comes in after the fact and says, hey, you did this and this impacted my customer, my business, my future, and or you didn't allow me time or put enough notice to let me comment or know that the U.S. government was doing this. Therefore, U.S. government, I'm going to sue you to stop this movement or to force you to roll it back. When we follow this formalized process now, we have legal safe harbor. Should that come up, and we can say, no, we actually followed formal legal processes for announcements and for due call. The fact that you missed it was on you. We now have the legal as well as what we believe the community's thoughts to move forward in this process. So as much as we would like to just flip a switch and go, we do have some formal processes yet to go through in order to make this transition. I'd like to say I have the authority to do that, but that also would be a lie. I make a formal recommendation to my boss's boss's boss, the Secretary of Commerce. 99.9% of the time, the Secretary of Commerce takes the recommendation that NIST puts forward. Okay, so we will write up a justification package for the Secretary, and she will review it, and then the Secretary of Commerce is the one who signs it into effect. This then becomes a standard for the U.S. government. Again, being a non-regulatory body, this becomes the standard for the U.S. government inside for our internal corporate standards. We are not blind to the effect that many external bodies, our Canadian partners, industry, and other governments also point to, cite, or use this program as well. So we understand that this shift is not just a U.S. government shift, but will be a shift potentially for many, many other markets. But that's also why, because we have to have a standard internally for the U.S. government, that the initial plan will be for us to have a FIPS 140-3 wrapper that will then point and cite by normative reference the ISO standards. That allows us to keep it enforced as a standard inside the U.S. government because it, as a FIPS, it, that it will be a requirement. And it also allows us as the program to lock in a version of the ISO standard that we wish to baseline on. And then also as a larger community, we can, as we move forward, decide what our transition times may or may not be if and when the ISO standard also transitions. So if ISO rolls a rev, we might say, great, we're going to move with that rev, and we'll do that just in the normative reference in our FIPS wrapper. But if we want to have more time in transition, or if even we don't agree with inside the U.S. government working with our Canadian partners that the rev change reflects our risk tolerances, we can then stay on the version that we point to within our wrapper. So that's kind of our plans going forward. This is how the breakdown of how those pointers potentially will work, along with a new SP.
SB 800-140, ironically, to help with a little numerical synchronization. That will then point to the ISO, and then also, if needed, call out any deltas or differences should they exist. I would like to have this initial legal proceedings, as well as a decision about how we as a community would like to do this transition, where we will do, you know, fair warning time, overlap time, and then cutoff date to use of just ISO by the calendar year, by December. Okay? So I'm not saying we're all going to be within the US government using. What I'm saying is, by December, what I'd like to have is my legal requirements wrapped up, and then a decision together as a community as far as how and when we would do this transition to practice. So that's our thoughts right now on international standards for FIPS. And I'll take questions at the end, and I'm sure there will be some.
So like Matt mentioned, one of the goals is to move towards these international standards. So for CCRA, we're really an international body. So we feel like we do lots of international, I'll say, standards-like activities. And so those activities are performed within international technical communities. So industry, government, end users, it's open to anyone, can join and develop what we term collaborative protection profiles as part of the new CCRA. And the goal, in case any of you aren't familiar, of the CCRA is sort of evaluate once, sell to many. So evaluate in one scheme and sell to any scheme within that mutual recognition arrangement. As part of the CCRA, there is the CC standard itself. Now, the CCRA maintains their own version of this standard, but it is also captured in ISO 15408. And this is currently up for review. So there was a study period for this ISO standard. And as of April, just last month, they have extended that period for another 6 months. So they're taking comments and suggestions. They've put out a call that includes requests for information, sort of answer certain questions, give information in terms of how this should be updated. And the CCRA version is undergoing very similar things, so we try to keep them very aligned. And recent discussions have been around whether or not there really needs to be two versions. No decision has been made, don't get too excited. But since there is this ISO version, there is this international standard, do we need to maintain two versions of the standard, or is there a path forward where we can influence ISO in such a way that it still works for the CCRA? And so that is being researched a little bit. If you have thoughts, I'd love to hear them. We've gone through lots of pros and cons on that. So that's where we are. And we expect a revision coming. As with all international standards, it does take some time. So, and the study period was extended, so I think we're into next year at the very earliest before we'll see a revision of 15408.
So as far as international agreements go, hi Dan, Dan's in the back. Hi. The NIST CSC agreement, of course, is still how we run the program. CMVP is and will continue to be a joint validation and certification program with the governments of the United States and Canada. We're working together to modify some of the language that will allow us to share that test data if allowed by the vendor. Again, as we said in some of the earlier slides, we'd like to, if there's a profile that has crypto requirements, and of course we have crypto requirements, we would like to have the test data be shared between the two schemes. Other things after the announcement
of 19790. We're going to have some IP issues that we're going to have to work out, mostly with ISO, but we'll take care of that through most of our bulk purchasing. And then the bottom bullet here is quite important. Even though the programs will work together and to some extent be mutually supportive, where CMVP will still envision pointing to a CC profile for those higher level of assurances, and we want to work towards and move to using the ISO standard, that does not mean all of the mechanisms used in CC for the mutual recognition agreement will also be brought over and used in the CMVP program. We are not intending that. Instead, what we will do is, as we use the ISO standard, that will allow for, should the CSC and NIST decide, for us to use other country validations, other country test data in our validations, but we will do that in a pairwise mechanism based on NIST and CSC's decisions, our comfort level with the validity, the experience and the expertise of those organizations, and how those laboratories that do the testing are managed and maintained.
So like I said earlier, we're part of the CCRA, so we have a very large international community that we work with here in NIAP. But we also support the WTO and the principles therein, and I know that NIST does as well. In fact, a few months ago, Apostle and I gave a briefing at the request of our trade representatives on just this topic and how both of our programs work towards minimizing technical barriers to trade and how that benefits government and industry. So that's a key principle for NIAP. The other thing that I wanted to really key on here in terms of international agreements as part of the CCRA, there is currently a CCRA International Cryptographic Working Group. And this working group was established in order to determine the crypto requirements that would be accepted by all the member nations in the CCRA. And so this group has been working through all the different cryptographic requirements in the CC to determine what makes sense for each nation, what each scheme would prefer, what options would need to be made available, can we coalesce on a single thing, or do we need to have a selection where there's multiple algorithms specified? If we have multiple algorithms, how would each scheme actually do that specification to make sure that the vendor community and the laboratories know what is expected for that particular nation? So at this point, most of the crypto requirements have been drafted. We're now working on evaluation activities. And NIAP has, I think just a few weeks ago, reached out to NIST as well to talk to them about the evaluation activities that we are going to put forward for this group. And right now, the group is only the member nations, but we do expect to pass this over to the CCUF, which is the Common Criteria Users Forum, crypto working group, in the near term to have their input as well so that we can get input from the labs and industry and really work this in a collaborative manner. So this group, focused solely on crypto in an international arena, has been progressing very well. We have both generic requirements as well as requirements for the USB collaborative protection profile, which was their first, which was sort of the test case for the group. So, and it helped scope the work initially.
So as part of this work that we've been doing in both internally and the CMVP, CAVP labs are aware of, we've been updating some of the tool sets that we've been using, tool sets on a couple of different layers, both the initial test suites, test tools, as well as our mechanisms to exchange test information between the laboratories and with NIST, and our ability internally for our business processes and how we evaluate the test reports sent to us, as well as how we process the information, the billing, the receipts, the exchanges or the questions that we exchange back and forth. And we are moving from a beta to an online version as soon as we run through our internal government accreditation paperwork and reviews. But we have some of the betas done. We'll be using hybrid cloud models, both internal to our computing facility and external Amazon Web Services, to allow for both easier exchange, automated exchange mechanisms, as well as recovery and resilience operations. And as we go forward, we're going to continue to debug and add more to the infrastructure. So the first step has been very internal, automating a lot of the very well-known, very well-exercised business processes that we've had over the years. And then our next phase will be externally focused, looking to automation on how we communicate, how we express requirements, how we post validations, and then the ability for folks also to automate some of the test submissions, all the way back to, and a long-term vision being looking at, can we even open test APIs on commercial products? So should a consumer want to, they can do a known answer test, put an IV in, and get an answer back out to have assurances, not just in point items on market, but on deployed items and infrastructure as well. That would be something we would not require in the standard, but something then that we would just offer up as an open tool working collaboratively that could be used should a customer want it or should a vendor want to offer it as an extra capability.
It's me.
Nope, that's you.
So NIAP also has secure online document and data upload, and we have for the past little while we've been working on size restrictions, but currently we are where we are. In addition, we've been working some other process efficiencies, so we are working on a tool in order to input assurance maintenance requests. So this is for products that have already been evaluated and have been patched or have been revised in some manner, and they want to maintain their certificate. Currently, the way this works is that it's all through email. That's not a great solution. If someone's out of the office or you just happen to miss it in your queue, it can result in great delays. So we're working on a way that will actually be incorporated into our web tool, and it can be uploaded just like any of our other evaluations. So that will be coming. In addition, for validations of evaluations, we do have a tool to make those responses and comments more consistent. We did hear back from both our validators and evaluators about some issues, so we're improving that tool, and we will continue to do so that we can speed up the time that it takes and so everyone knows what to expect and where to find it. In addition, we have technical rapid response team. If you don't know what that is, NIAP has what we call technical rapid response teams, or TERTs. And these are ways in which for evaluations that have technical issues or there's questions about a requirement or an assurance activity, you can ask us and we'll get back to you. Our goal is to be rapid. That has not worked out so well really recently. We've had some delays. So we have a tool coming online that will hopefully help us. It's more of a back-end tool, but it will help us track the requests, again, make sure that it's not all over email, and get the input back out to the evaluators and the validators as quickly as possible. So all of these things should help us speed up our times to get products on our lists. I think that's it.
So that's the best job in NIAP is being known as head turt. So it's 9:30. We'd be happy to take questions, comments, concerns, thoughts. People are already either leaving or moving to the mic. I can't tell which. But yeah, come on up.
Please, if you are going to have questions, come to the mic so that they properly get recorded.
You write it down, too.
Actually, I like the fact that you're working together. I really do. My concern, though, is so far I haven't seen anything productive in the sense of we submit our reports to NIAP on entropy. They come back, say they're good. We give them CMVP, and they say, not good. We want more information.
Yeah.
Is it possible that as you guys come together, you come out and tell the community this is acceptable in both programs as you're going, not wait till the very end, so that we start knowing what we're working on is going to work for both programs and we don't have to deal with that and spend time on it?
All right, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And yeah, we can do that. We'll have to kind of lift the blanket back a little bit and expose some of the negotiations that are going on, but I mean, I don't have a problem with that. The only risk to that is, you know, we might say, yeah, we're going this way, and then, nah, that didn't work. But maybe that's better to have that dialogue openly than not. So, yeah, maybe we can do that. Yeah. At least I can do that. We'll have to talk to the NIAP folks.
I think we can work on that and get some information out there. I think that's true.
Okay.
So, similar question to what was just asked, but kind of in a bigger context. I mean, FIPS is effectively is a prerequisite for CC certification. It has been for quite a while. And I asked this question probably to Chris Salter probably 5-6 years ago, whatever it was, and the answer I got then was, we don't talk to each other, we don't trust each other. So if FIPS is a requirement for, yeah, like this is
I don't
good.
Trust Chris and good. I don't talk to him either.
So if FIPS is a prerequisite for CC, and mostly what we're talking about here is Canada and the U.S., and of course around the world, I mean, there's different schemes that don't necessarily use FIPS,
right.
So you want to keep the crypto requirements in the security, the protection profiles, that's fine. But if you're doing a certification through Canada or the U.S. or one of the countries that accepts FIPS as a standard, why restate the requirements at all? Why not have the crypto requirements in an appendix and the requirement is if you're doing FIPS, you're done. These are the rest of the requirements, and if you're not doing it through those schemes, then you need to do everything that's listed in the appendix. But if you're doing FIPS, the requirement is you need FIPS level 1, level 2, whatever it is, and that's taken care of because you guys are on the same page and you're not duplicating requirements all the time.
Yeah, so a couple things. So first, for NIAP, we don't actually mandate FIPS right now. So what we mandate is, for the NIAP scheme, is CAVP. So we do not mandate CMVP currently. We would like to get there, but we're just not quite there yet. So that's first. Second of all, so NIAP works in this international community, right? And our protection profiles, especially our collaborative protection profiles, are internationally developed. And so the requirements are agreed upon by that whole community. And so it doesn't matter that NIAP can use FIPS because, like you said, not everyone can. And so the requirements are the requirements. And for the NIAP scheme, we accept that as evidence. But in the other schemes, that's not true, which is why you'll see the requirements and the assurance activities in the protection profiles.
So
go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. This is an ugly space we're in because of the differing scopes. So a FIPS is a requirement for the U.S. government, whereas NIAP and CC is working in a larger scope in an international scheme. But then, at the same time, NIAP is also for the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of caught in this weird international, not international relationship tension. And one of the mechanisms that we're trying to use to help alleviate some of those tensions is the FIPS pointer to the ISO standard that then may, we hope, help other country schemes who use that minimize some of those differences. And then, as we said in an earlier slide, NIAP and CMVP still need to get through the profile versus DTR translation to get to that higher level of pointer and acceptance right now. So the heart of the issue is the different scopes and the different levels of acceptance that are occurring. And that's a tough issue.
It just is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you also have
I don't have a good answer
WTO.
For that's what that means. Yeah.
Barriers to trade stuff.
Yeah, I got WTO, I got TPP, I got to deal with as well. Yeah.
Hi, Josh Berkman, Oracle. So the related to what you were just saying, I'm glad that we're no longer pointing at an ancient NIAP OSPP from the within NIAP requirements for higher assurance. I'm glad that's gone. But now we seem to be pointing to the OSPP, which no one has currently evaluated against for certain levels within within FIPS. So that's sort of like a chicken egg thing right now. So it feels like it ought to say preferred versus required, because what it does leave vendors who are waiting maybe for some other vendor to go get that particular operating system evaluated against their product with little choice. So I think a little bit of wording change there until there's some products available that have been actually evaluated against a particular protection profile, it's kind of hard to require it. You know, to like raise the bar on assurance basically means nobody can do it.
You want to tell that? Again, you know, we're kind of caught in this scope issue where, you know, CMVP is for modules, not overall end item. CC is more product or end item associated. And then, again, for the government as a FIPS, if we want and we do to have a better understanding of the assurances that the higher levels that we assign obtain, we are of some belief that a module conformance is good, but because of some of the dependencies and the other threat models that can attack the module, there needs also to be some assurances around the end item that the module resides. So we are still planning on having a pointer to higher level assurance activities that can continue to protect the module in those very small areas that the government requires it. So to some extent, I understand what you're saying. We're pointing to dead air a little bit. But we also feel just because of the threat models that we understand, we do need something a little bit more to drive the understanding that you're going to be putting on the workload of that module to protect you.
So I guess what would be helpful as a follow-up is if we're talking to a customer who requires a higher level assurance that's actually not possible at this time.
Yeah, right. And I think that's a perfectly legitimate conversation to have with a customer to say, this would be, you know, level 4.
We could do this, but it's impossible.
We have done everything in CMVP to get you there.
Yeah.
Everything in this assurance program meets those requirements. This other assurance program that I need to tack onto it doesn't exist right now. And when that occurs, then this will be, I mean, that's, when in doubt, the truth helps.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks very much for honesty and straightforwardness. I hope I'm not going to offend anybody by mentioning this, but you know, sometimes on the website when you provide guidance, it's not very clear. So for example, we have a product that we're putting through the protection profile right now. Should be finished any moment, right, Aaron? and yet on the site it says you can use EAL, but if you have to buy something from the approved products list, there are no EALs on the approved products list. So it says something about EAL 4 plus, but then there are products that are EAL 2 plus that have been touted as being supported and for sale. So if you can't buy something in the federal government, unless it's against the protection profile, how come EAL is acceptable right now? I believe it said something like acceptable to November or October 2017. But it's not very clear which EAL level is acceptable. So.
I think that's except for you. I think that's for you.
So I guess I'm really asking for very clear guidelines so that we don't have to try and explain it to our customers, and our customers know what they're asking for.
Right, so the new CCRA, which limits or removes, depending on your perspective, the EAL levels, is not fully transitioned until 2017, right? So that's the date that you're referring to, that 2017 date, right?
Yeah.
So, so until then, all of those other things are still perfectly valid and mutually recognized.
Right.
And so if you're saying that the language is not clear regarding that transition cycle, okay, so we can take that note and we can update the website if if that's confusing people.
Yeah, it basically suggests that EAL4 Plus will go away in 2017, but it doesn't say anything else about the other ones. And you know, some vendors can be a bit sneaky about going, no, we've got two, so we're good.
So we're okay. Okay, yeah, we'll take a note to check it out and
thank
update our
much.
Language.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
And you can never offend us by saying a U.S. government website is not clear.
Okay, so I have a question since nobody stepped up to the mic yet. Earlier on, Matt, you mentioned that the CC lab algorithm testing, you're looking at having it accepted as CAVP basically testing. Does that mean that the CC lab would have to obtain accreditation as a CAVP test lab, or is there some kind of magic going to happen with the use of the test results to make it look like it is?
Or there's a third option. I said something wrong. I think
you're a website.
Right, exactly. I think what I was trying perhaps incorrectly to express was that the CAVP test and test labs would then be acceptable and used by CC if CC has a requirement for algorithm testing. No matter what the situation for CAVP and CMVP, we still would require the use of accredited NAV lab laboratories for that testing. We would not then turn that over to a different scheme.
Okay.
Right, so just to add to that, so all of the NIAP CC labs also are FIPS labs. So they're sort of dual-hatted. They have two sides. So in some of our discussions, we've been talking about that, yes, so they're both, and NIAP CC labs are NVLAP accredited as well. That's how they get their accreditation. So some of our discussions have been around that accreditation, and if we can share results to the other side of that lab, right, then it's still an NVLAP accredited lab who's actually performing the evaluation, but maybe they can accept the results. So it's sort of that kind of a scenario.
And something we didn't talk about, but as crazy as this sounds, we're even talking about, can we coordinate on our laboratory evaluations between NIAP and CMVP as well? So, you know, we come and visit you once with twice the amount of people instead of twice with half, depending on... I think I did that math right. Right. Everyone looks forward to the auditors. Depending on, you know, and some, you know, it depends. I mean, some labs might prefer that, some might not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Early call. Oh, yes, ma'am.
Yes, Matt, I have a question for you. I'm Eve from ESSEC. You talked about the automated testing for algorithms, and I think yesterday Apostle has also a talk with Cisco people and showed a very nice demo. So if this automated testing system is fully functional online, do you envision that in the future the FIPS lab may not play an important role as we are right now? Is FIPS lab going to kind of fade away, or you have other plan for the labs to do the job?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So let's work from the top down. FIPS labs are still going to be essential for the CMVP scope areas first. NIST and CSC cannot scale globally to the needs of the certification assurances that we have, so we need labs to do that for us as well, secondary. In the algorithm space, much of the work, and Apostle will nod or not nod, or throw something at me, depending on how I go with this question. I apologize. I'm going to answer this question a little non-linearly. At NIST, we do lots of different certification methods, and we certify in the U.S. as the U.S. Calibration Authority lots of things. All calibration sources in the US are done through NIST as the calibration source and then a calibration lab. And we do measurements, concrete, steel, US government identity PIV cards, which some of your labs are as well. And then we do it on a range of risk. So for in the US government, if you are building products that have an IPv6 profile, we allow the vendor to self-test using an ISO standard where they submit themselves the test report and their shrink wrap, and then they sign a form and say we're good. On the other end of the spectrum of risk tolerance was having an independent third-party laboratory conduct a sample test. And on the farthest end is product surveillance. But that's done mostly in areas like medical devices and food and drug, where we will take random samplings of product off shelf and then verify that product on shelf actually still meets conformance. Our risk tolerances in automation and algorithms still will require an independent third-party validator. So we will still need the labs, based on our risk tolerances, to independently validate the algorithm implementation of vendors. So that's a long story for, yes, we're going to continue to need labs. We're going to continue to need them at the module. We will continue to use them as independent validation on the algorithm. And in our risk tolerance space, we are going to require independent third-party accredited laboratories for crypto that's used in the US government. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, I think we have time for one more question. Or extra time for coffee.
Oh,
there we go, Steve.
One thing that would be nice if possible in the future is if it could be formalized through an IG or something, that the assurance activities for a common criteria test would fulfill the functional testing requirements for FIPS 140. It would be really nice. That would be one thing nice, putting it together. And since they really would meet all the requirements, being able to just kind of document that once and being able to send the same equivalents to both would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's exactly kind of what we're working on, right? And so I'll never remember. So that's what we're working on, and that's what we talk about when we talk about how we're doing the mapping, and we're trying to see exactly what how those things will work together so that we can do that, and we would publish something officially once we have that done regarding what you can do.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
Yeah, and we take your note also about communicating that progress as we go forward to help you guys lean in and see what our thoughts are and where we're going in those spaces too. Okay.
All right. Please join me in thanking Matt and Mary for a very interesting talk.
Just a quick question. I'm really excited about the topic about eliminating duplicate work.
Right.
So the two customer over about the same, almost the same.
I think the general.
I mean, my question was, would it be possible for two teams to set up Boston Commons You mentioned something about new ISO, but from the CC side, you refer to adoption.
Yes.
So would it be possible for both teams, for some of the test requirements, referring to one document?
Wouldn't that be lovely?
Yeah. The ISO CC scheme she was talking about is a much higher level one than this one. This is really just on, actually 19790 is just on sidechain attack specific, and then there's another one on crypto test.
Yeah.
Whereas CC is more around the process or profiles. It would be great if in the CC one, if they said, if there is crypto assurances needed, there was a normative reference to that.
Yes, that'd be perfect.
That would be perfect.
Yes.
I agree.
Okay.
I don't know why we didn't think about that.
Yeah.
But that's a good idea.
Okay. Yes, that's why.
It is clever. Yeah. But that means I got to participate in my CC stuff. I would like to have it signed by December. And like I said.
Okay, if I could ask everyone to take their seats and we'll move on to the next talk. And if you have further discussions, you can maybe take them outside or catch people at the break.
Every year we maybe take votes, and then maybe then it gets sort of maybe like a year and a half, 2 years. So we'll do an overlap and then a cutoff.
Run outside. Is everybody has to run outside to talk, except for Andy.